The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experienced when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
Imagine a world where wealth technology is simplified. NetWealth is continually investing in new tools and platform features to optimize your staff productivity and to give you and your clients the best user experience. With our managed accounts functionality, bring new efficiency and scale to your investment operations. A world of technology awaits. Discover it at netwealth.com.au/woo.
To give listeners of the Advice Tech podcast another avenue to solve technology problems that matter most and efficiently evaluate the landscape of Advice Tech providers, Ensemble has launched an Advice Tech space on its platform. If you want to know how your advice peers are solving their tech challenges, big and small, it's the place to go. Head to the Ensemble platform or use the link in the show notes to join today.
Today's guest is one of the sharpest minds in advice tech. Stephen Goh, co-founder of Fable, has spent decades at the intersection of finance, tech and innovation, from building one of Australia's first online trading platforms to years in Silicon Valley to now reshaping how financial advice gets done. In this episode, Stephen breaks down why advice workflows have barely changed in 20 years and how Fable's agentic AI flips that on its head, so transforming 10-hour SOAs into 30-minute experiences, predicting advisor needs in real time and radically improving both efficiency and client outcomes. We also dive into the Ernst & Young or EY study, early performance gains, and why AI won't replace advisors but will actually define or redefine rather how they work. This is a big, exciting look at the future of advice. So let's jump in. But before we do, this is our last Advice Tech podcast for the year. And thank you so much for listening and collaborating over in the Advice Tech space. Have a wonderful holiday period and see you in late January next year. And I started by asking Stephen what the oldest piece of tech he owns is, whether he still uses it.
So my parents were academics. Dad taught it, was a professor of maths at and taught him in a university. And we have this old mechanical calculator, which goes back to the 1960s, which you set a whole bunch of numbers and you crank a particular handle and it adds large numbers. And if you want to multiply, you crank the handle more times. And we have that at home and we sort of still use it part as a doorstop and also for sheer entertainment value.
That's going to be the first thing I look up on YouTube after this. That's fantastic. And then as we sort of fast forward to today, so 1960 to 2025, are there maybe one or two ways that you're using AI, either personally or professionally?
I use AI for just about everything at the moment, just for writing letters, emails, producing PowerPoints, documents, writing code. It's quite the accelerant. It's pretty good.
It is. On the writing code side, are you, like we're seeing all these sort of agents come out, et cetera, are you dabbling with a lot of those or do you have a go-to sort of stack from that perspective?
Well, I play a little bit with Visual Studio Code and all the various add-ons and I played around Cursor and a few others. I do like having a little bit more control, but I think anyone who's been writing code for 20, 30 years, you've been using a variation on AI for a while now, and a lot of the transformers that you see now with, especially around the LLM family or foundation models, they're all based around next word completion. And if you've been using IntelliSense, which has been in Visual Studio since like the 1990s, you've been using a precursor to the contemporary version of how we see AI today.
Yeah, wow.
And if you want to talk about really old AI, I wrote a version of Eliza using punch cards in Fortran in the 1970s, because that's what Dad used to do when that was his idea of babysitting. And Eliza is the original. That's the original AI, right? That's the original AI.
Wow, Oh my goodness! No, this is. I can tell this is going to be a fantastic discussion.
I am really old.
Yeah. No, it's. I think it's. I'm going to call it context, Steve. Like you've got everything from where it all started to where it is now. I think it's freaking fantastic in wisdom as well. So if we on the topic of wisdom and where you've been, etc., can you take us through your professional origin story, Steve, and what led you to, I guess, founding Fable?
Okay. It all started when I was young. So my parents were academics. Dad was a professor of maths, and mum's a lecturer in fine arts, painting and sculpture. And we grew up everywhere, like in Berkeley, New York, across Asia, and in Australia. I had a really interesting childhood, decided that doing that much code when I was young was getting in the way of me meeting girls. So I took a professional detour and went into chartered accounting instead as a precursor to get to investment banking. Just to be clear, chartered accounting was not about changing my ability to get married, but I'll just leave it at that. I am so glad to be back in Australia, Patrick. You've got no idea. Anyway, so I took a detour in chartered accounting. I was originally going to start working in investment banking. I had this grand idea that investment banking was this amazing industry, and it certainly is. But I was a little shocked at how inefficient many of the parts were. And back in the early 1990s, I had this idea that I could re-engineer all of that. So I set up a company called Sanford, and we launched that about a month before ComSec started. The guy that was going to be my CTO at the time couldn't join the company. So I hadn't written any code for like a decade. But I used to write Assembler and Pascal and all that sort of stuff when I was a teenager, because that's what you did. Then I went down to the local bookshop, bought about $500 worth of books. And then I wrote all the settlement systems and the like. I wrote all the chess settlement systems and the website and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And we were the first in Australia to do market quotes and all that sort of stuff. People forget that. Because computing is so abundant at the moment, internet is so ubiquitous, that it's actually only the consumer version of the internet is only actually very recent. It's only really in the last 30 years. And if you imagine that prior to like the late 1990s, people didn't hop onto computers. They used phones and they turned up in person. So this whole experience of using computing on the internet in the last 20, 30 years may feel a little... So next time you're using an old SaaS platform in financial planning, and you can imagine a whole bunch of them and you think it's a dinosaur, I can assure you there are older dinosaurs out there.
Goodness. Far out. And then if we fast forward to now, like what has led you to Fable? That's a fantastic origin story. Really appreciate you taking us through that, Sue.
I took a detour after building Sanford, and I think Sanford, Sanford was a success in its own right. And then I built BillDirect and a couple of other businesses. And I took a detour through Silicon Valley from about 2006 onwards. And then I had a whole bunch of friends ask me to come back to Australia to go and build another financial services business. I was sort of thinking like, I don't think there was an opportunity to build another online broker. I was rather bored before that. I was kicking around and I caught up with an old old childhood friend who'd she was getting older, and she had a bad divorce and had a pool business and was empty nesting, and all she wanted to do was get older and go to Bali a couple of times with her girlfriends. And then she spent like $30,000 on three financial advisors.
Wow.
And the advice was the subject of many a royal commission. So I thought, absolutely, that's completely an opportunity, and I reckon I can go and fix that. So that was around 2018, then COVID happened, which I think it's one of those sort of things where everyone in the world can say, and then COVID happened. That took a detour for a few years. And then when ChatGPT hit the airwaves a couple of years ago, and I got to meet Sam and a whole bunch of these other people in Silicon Valley, it was like, absolutely, completely, we could go and do this business now. So Fable's original business was going to be a direct-to-consumer play, and we have some really bright ideas about that. And very quickly, it got to a stage where we realized, especially in a regulated industry like this one, that we would need to fix financial planning because that industry's got, 25 years ago, it took 10 years to do a financial plan. 10 years ago, it took 10 hours to do a financial plan. 3 years ago, it still took 10 hours to do a financial plan. We thought we could fix it. That resulted in a range of pivots, and that's where we are now. So we're pretty sure that we can get it down from 10 hours to maybe as low as 30 minutes an hour. We've got some data around that. So we're we'll be rolling that out over the next few months.
Joined an industry webinar that sharpened your skills? Make it count. Log into cpdcheck.com and have it assessed for CPD.
Wowee. So you've just brushed over two things really quickly. You built Bell Direct and you've met Sam Altman. Is that right? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah. Mei Lin, my co-founder, and I've got a whole bunch of ex-Sanford and other people who've worked with me in the past on this journey with Fable. We actually did demo day, the original demo day in San Diego, back-to-back with Sam, which was pretty interesting. And there's a video of him wearing I think it's a purple T-shirt with a couple of collars. And we were actually the session immediately before him.
Oh, no, I've definitely seen that video with the dart ball polo there, and one of the collars is popped there. No, that's definitely stuck in the memory. And so you mentioned you're certainly a pioneer of, you know, in financial services at the very least. If we think about what Fable is now, you've talked about looking to, you know, 10 hours into 30 minutes from an SOA point of view. What about today, like in terms of if I jump into Fable, like what am I using? What are the sort of things I'm using it for? How does it sort of interact with everything else in the stack that we're using in a financial planning business, for example?
Yeah. I think the way philosophically where we're landing with the enterprise proposition is we think of it like as an agent. So there's a lot of tech out there which is now using AI in varying forms. And we think of it like as a metaphor, like having a kitchen. You go to your kitchen, you've got a toaster, you've got a fridge, you've got a pantry. It's fantastic that they're now AI-powered fridges and AI-powered toasters and the AI thing on the side of your pantry, which is great. And your toaster will run better and your fridge will run better. I liken that to like having a meeting note taker as an example. We like it having an agent. It's like having a sous chef. So you go to your kitchen, you say, look, I feel like a ham and cheese sandwich. The sous chef says, funny you should mention that. We've got some tomato in the fridge. And would you like that toasted? And you say, well, that sounds really pretty good. I'll have a toasted ham and cheese, a tomato sandwich. And then basically the agent explains it to you and guides you through it. And then voila, it produces a toasted ham and cheese and tomato sandwich. And that is philosophically a very different thing to having a meeting note taker where you would go to a toaster. It's still a toaster. It runs better, and that's fantastic. And there's a market for software which does that. But we think an agent is philosophically a much more interesting proposition, and that's how we think about it. And we know that to get this into the field, it's not a simple thing. We've engaged Ernst & Young, EYs, where they've been working with us on a study for about 2 months now. They're just wrapping up the first round of data, which just showed that, yes, we are realizing transformational gains in the professional context. And we'll be publishing that study around the time that this podcast goes live, which is pretty cool.
Wowee. Are there any highlights or any sort of data points you could share from that at a high level?
Yeah, some things we dramatically change the time that it takes. So I think everyone's seen like, you know, performance gains out of a meeting note taker, which is great. We can do meeting notes. That's great. Some things like preparing an SOA, doing KYC, doing the fact find process, all those sorts of things we can do as well. We're getting double-digit gains in many of those things. Consistently across the board, anything between 25 and 70% gains. In some cases, we're getting 95% gains in performance. We're pretty sure that across the board, we can get it down to out of this study, we understand what it's going to take to get the next round of gains. And I think that we can realize the dream of, you know, just changing the experience of being a financial planner. I think that would be a really nice thing to do.
Absolutely. No, that's some pretty insane stats there. And I guess my next question would be, you know, you've given the kitchen analogy, and to maybe extend that, is that also about you've trained Fable to know that the, you know, the knife is in the top drawer, so the, you know, it pulls out the tools to make the sandwich, for example. Is there a lot of that in there to use the tool to then use the other tools to get those gains, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, we designed it to feel familiar. So if you've been using a publicly available AI tool like ChatGPT or Claude and all those sorts of tools, you'll instantly recognize Fable. You can get started straight away, but very, very quickly, we've got an integration with IntelliFlow out very, very shortly, hopefully by the time this podcast goes live, and certainly also with RSS Explant. If you're using a product which begins with an A or an M, it may still take you 10 hours to do a financial plan. If you're using a product such as Explant and IntelliFlow, we've got a pathway to get you down to maybe, you'll definitely get double-digit gains, and then over a bit of time, hopefully get down to maybe an hour or so. And we think that's pretty exciting.
No, that is exciting. And that's, I guess, is that the agentic capability? It's got the context, it's got the data, can retrieve it.
Yeah. It's not about being a passive experience. It's about being interactive. And as an agent, we think of it as an intelligence that works side by side with you, shadows you. The primary connection is to connect with your email and then and other enterprise systems. And it starts guessing and predicting what it is that you'll need to complete a large complex task. And as you're going along, unlike say a meeting note taker where you might take a meeting note, come with a transcription on the other side, people get insights inside the transcription, which sort of feels a bit like search. We want the agent to be present in the meeting, and we have this bit of tech that we've developed internally. We've got put down some patents for that and all that sort of stuff around this is called foresight, where we start guessing and predicting what is going on in the course of your experience with the client, and then what does it take to get to the best possible completion. So, you know, many clients will come in the door and they think that they want to talk about a specific issue. It may be that the meeting finishes on a different point. The AI, we think of it as abundant, low cost, sufficient intelligence, goes out and guesses then all the 1,000 possibilities of the future, brings it into the moment when you are in the meeting, and it starts helping you re-engineer your experience with your client. And we think that's where you're going to get accelerated gains. So if you're using it over 3 to 6 months, yeah, where we think we can get you some really nice gains in your experience of working with a client. We think that's pretty cool.
Wow, that is really, really cool and really intriguing. And so that's learning from, I guess, the experience that your users are using the tool. You gave the example of, you know, connecting up your email. That's a huge part of it, I would assume. Like, you've then got that context immediately. That's where a lot of people's workflow is, isn't it?
Yeah. We start guessing and we start interacting with you and giving you suggestions. And the more you respond to the suggestions, the more we start to understand you. If you start dragging, dropping other things like your office procedures and all those sorts of things in there and templates and other documents you use around the office, it starts guessing how all these things start connecting. And then you start involving it. And the more you involve it, the better it gets. And it gets to this particular point where, yeah, it's like, so another bit of tech is I have an old Dungeons and Dragons Rules 5 book at home. And if you remember Dungeons and Dragons, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, it's like having a little familiar that sits on your shoulder. Like a little dragon sits on your shoulder and you're the wizard. And then basically the familiar is following you around everywhere and whispering to your ear and learning what you're doing about all the magical things that you're making, all the technical things that you're doing for your client. And it sits there and it helps learn and it helps you do all those things better. Actually, that's a much better metaphor than the kitchen one, but I think more people know the kitchen one than the Dungeons and Dragons story.
I think you're right. I appreciate them both. I think that's fantastic. If I think about I'm just thinking about, obviously, email coming in is huge, and then I guess the jobs to be done as a result. Do you think about it as well as like the physical tasks that it's taking away from the human, like whether that's, as we talked about before, the file notes, document generation? What about like sort of PDFs or completing freaking forms to product providers, that sort of stuff as well?
Yeah, the way we think about it is that it's, how does it get you 100% completion? We don't believe that AI will naturally on its own get 100% completions on very large documents. It'll still be there. So on first completion, we're getting like 30, 40, 50% gains. But over time, we think we can get you to like 80, 90, 100% gains to complete large PDFs. We have one sample in the EY study that we're doing at the moment where a client takes a very large zip file with like 50 or 60 emails and dozens of PDFs. Normally, the consequential workflows could take hours or several hours. For us, you just drag and drop it in, bunch of prompts, Bob's your uncle, done. It's all done. Like, you'll draft up forms, prepare memos, give a recommendation as to what to complete in Iris or Iris's X-Plan or IntelliFlow, and then you just press say yes, it just does it all, which is fantastic.
That is fantastic. And so is that changing the way that you're thinking about, or I guess you're adapting to the current level of or lack of integration that a lot of these providers have, or I guess where, you know, data lives and breathes in terms of disjointed tech stacks? Does that change with the advent of things like MCP and just APIs becoming, you know, better at communicating with agents and AI?
Yeah, I think this industry, and I come back to the thing about the relationship that people have with compute, there are these many quality dominant enterprise stacks. Once again, like X-Plan and IntelliFlow and Midwinter and blah blah blah. And there's a long tail of them, where people have this relationship with those applications. And then how we think about integration is the combination of either RPA, APIs, MCP, and the like. MCP fantastic acronym, you still need to do work, crazy as that may be, to make it functional. There are different ways of bringing to life all these legacy systems. And it's not about the unusual thing about this specific industry is the, and not just in Australia, but especially in the US and UK and other OECD countries, is the very long tail of what are often cottage industry applications and how they all need to be cobbled together so that the advisor can give their best experience to their clients. People think about a dominant platform like, say, Explain on Teleflow, which might, in a real advisor's practice, like 30, 40, 50% of their critical workflows are around a system such as that. But that other 40, 50, 60%, it's this long tail cottage industry application. Some firms like Findex in Australia have large integrated platforms for very standardized process flows, but the larger industry, I think, is made up of everyone's special source of whatever, you know, little applications
that been concocted in the kitchen. Together. Of course.
Yep, absolutely.
No, absolutely. No, that's it. I've got to double down on those analogies, Steve. So if you mentioned, obviously we went through all the acronyms there, so RPA, MCP, APIs. Do you still see, like, so RPA is the answer to a lot of those cottage industry tech stacks, like being able to, someone guides the process of how we log into this and we do this, et cetera. Is that a big part of Fable
still?
Yeah,
RPA to our mind is the lowest common denominator. Anyone who's built an application where it's got a website can be mounted RPA. It's got to be done securely, and RPA has this level of fragility. But if you understand how people brought online banking to the fore originally, and many of these applications in the first internet, most of that was in variations of RPA, right? So it's there's another thinking around RPA in 2025, and that may explain the number of these sort of like agentic browsers has sort of popped up, which they're lovely at home, but I would never recommend any of those things in the enterprise, especially with client data. Yeah, it's those things have to be used judiciously and to a bank rate.
Of course. And just for listeners, I think we've covered this acronym a couple of times, but yeah, robotic process automation. So the way I sort of explain it without doing, you know, a kitchen analogy is it's sort of just like a macro on steroids, isn't it? Like if you think about you being in Excel, it's just repeatable process steps that you've shown it once and guided it down that path. And a lot of the time you've got to be there, is that right? You've got to sit there and watch it actually do its thing?
Not really. Some companies have UiPath, which is an incredible success story, based out of Silicon Valley with a team in Eastern Europe. It's a $10 billion listed company, but lives on RPA, things like that. Some of those things, it's all about one way or the other. If you've got a website, you have exposed compute to potentially other things, and then RPA is a pathway to controlling other applications. But you know, in this particular industry, because of the variability of the tasks and the like, RPA can play a role. But at the end of the day, it's got to involve a human. But there's got to be humans in the loop.
Of course. You mentioned, we gave that example before of how you sort of dropped in the zip file or the folder of a truckload of context and things to do. Do you see a time where instead of Fable massively complementing these existing tools like your X plans and your big CRMs, etc., that it can do a lot of that stuff on its own without needing these other tools as part of that cottage industry comment before? Do you see it doing a lot of the stuff without needing to get external support?
Yeah, we think the dominant platforms like OpenAI's, Claude's, Gemini's and the like, they have a role to play in mass consumer and to a point. We think that the certainly in the enterprise, you wouldn't use any of those applications because you've got all universes of privacy and security issues. So one way or the other, you need to, every enterprise should be using a proprietary secured application built on the API stack to maybe one of these other organizations or alternative local hosting and the like. We have some of those solutions available to our clients, right? So that's one thing. We think the inbuilt tools have an upper limit because there is an upper limit to technically how those applications can work. They become more accurate in many ways to the extent to which they can read things like Reddit, as an example. When it comes to financial services applications, which are highly detailed in a regulated environment where you're using, we're dealing with intensely private and personal data, then absolutely it must be based around a local context. And to that extent, it does require a bespoke application.
Totally. And then if I think about, like, I'm just going off your website and the sort of array of YouTube videos, it's a very, like, it's the agentic or the conversational interface. Do you see that as the interface of the future? Do you see more sort of dynamic visuals popping up, whether that's charts or modeling scenarios, et cetera? How do you sort of see that playing out?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've got a version 2 that we're rolling out sometime in the next few weeks. And it does everything, charts and graphs, 30-40 page SOAs, all those things. If it can connect with an existing provider of producing an SOA, it'll connect with that, and we can actually build on that to create the right experience in the workplace. But by default, if it doesn't have that, it can pull out templates and the like and help you get there. Absolutely. Spreadsheets, charts, graphs. And then it's not about just simply transforming a linear experience with a client. It's about shadowing the advisor and responding to real world things. So an added thing that we think of is every advisor has a bounded rationale problem with their client base. If you're a financial planner, the average financial planner has a median of about 80 clients. If you're a stockbroker, it's about 250. Every professional in the space has their client base, but professionals tend to gravitate to their top 10 clients because they're human beings, right? And then what we do is we're experimenting with changing the experience that the advisor has with their entire client base. How do we get the 60th percentile client to have the same experience as the 20th? It may never be as good as the 10th percentile, but certainly the 20th to the 60th, there's a lot of opportunities there to help advisors start thinking about what's going on with their climate. So as the events unfold in the market, as the research gets produced, as something happens, the agent figures out what's going across an advisor's client base and starts shadowing them and helps them thinking about that, you know, that last 50% of their client base. And we think that's I can change the yield at that can help an advisor think about their clients better and deliver more comprehensive service to their client base.
I'm really intrigued by that. I think I'm just thinking about recent releases have been the truckload from OpenAI, for example. Like, they've come out recently with ChatGPT Pulse, which is designed to, maybe it's a bit like when electricity is cheaper at night, for example, but overnight it's meant to bring through like all of your interests and all the memory that it's got about you and serve you up, insights and proactive stuff when you wake up in the morning. Are you seeing this being more of a proactive tool for advisors or advice firms rather than I have to go into the tool to then, bring up this client and start working on them? Is that how you attack that problem of addressing those clients? It's actually doing all that proactive work for you based on what's happening in external areas or emails that aren't coming through rather than emails that are coming through from those top 10 clients, for example?
Yeah, it depends on the profession. So for many, for some professionals who are thinking about, who specialize, say, in debt rotation, it may matter less. For some advisors who live on trading desks institutional stockbroking businesses, they've been confronted with a large amount of information like every minute, and their ability to get a comprehensive view of what's happening across their entire client base is limited. We can help change that equation. And then, of course, there's a whole universe of professionals which are variations of the hybrid across that, right? So it's about, it's about you having your second brain that helps you see the 50% of your client base that you don't usually think of just because you're a human being, and helps you think about, how do you reach and service your last client the way that you should. So that's something different. The ChatGPT thing, I think, guesses it and updates itself each night. That's right for that sort of service. Some services like Perplexity have something a bit more immediate. We think in this professional context, like, because something's happened immediately, it's a different service, right? So, yeah.
I'm totally with you. And then if we think about AI in general, the advice profession, is there anything that's got you excited the most about it, or a feature or component of Fable that you've built or a building that you're the most proud of, Steve?
Yeah, I think we originally started this business with a consumer application in mind about how do we change, but people forget, like, in the late 1990s, I mean, people see online stockbroking now as ubiquitous and everywhere. But prior to like 1998, 2000, like, people use phones and turn up to offices, right? So that experience of online share trading, online investing, it's actually a very, very recent experience. we think what's happening with AI, and you can see it, like there's a million people, I think there's 1 to 1.5 million Australians which use direct services, of which 80% of them are basically penny gambling. And then as for the other 12 to 15 million people in this country, there's a reach to financial planning and financial service. I think it's like 1 to 1.5 million people can reach advice regularly because the costs are relatively prohibitive. There's some data from Investment Trends, and we've got a very close relationship with them. It says that anything between 2 and 5 million more people would love to have an experience with some supportive relationship if they could. And we think that there's a bunch of new organizational forms that will be right for reaching that. And it won't necessarily be like having a chatbot with research in it. It'll be something that'll be much more interactive. And we actually came up with a direct-to-consumer play, which we're very excited with. We felt, though, that consumer play we wouldn't be able to execute on without fixing the advisors first, because at some point in the experience, you have to talk to a human being. We think that's absolutely critical. People want to speak to human beings. They don't want to speak to avatars, and they don't want to speak to AI robots. They want to speak to other people. And I think the way we've thought about it is we'll fix the advisors first with a critical part of some key systems, which I think we've done. And over the next few months, it'll become very clear. And then I think when we come out with that consumer proposition early in the new year, we're really excited with it. We think that'll really upend things.
I'm with you. I think that's a good point around not wanting to speak to avatars or even voice agents. Like, that's where the relationships are built and where it shouldn't be replaced, at least in my opinion as well.
Yep.
Do you feel like, I feel like advisors and in particular, they're the bottleneck. We talk about email inboxes and they just sit there and it gets triaged or replied to whenever they can. You know, things are on their desk, et cetera. Do you see Fable in the context of being used by an advice practice, that Fable is actually reaching out to those clients directly as well, like taking a lot of that stress out of it, so direct rather than being the person elevates advisors all the time?
Yeah, we won't ever get to a point where we'll get the AI to automatically send an email or write to something. Where, you know, especially in this industry, you can't have a case where 1 to 2% of the time the AI does something wrong. It can't be 1 to 2%. That's not acceptable. It's got to be like zero. So it always has to be able to draft something for the advisor, let the advisor know, let the advisor be involved in anything that involves. And like, now, having said that, let's face it, like a lot of the time that advisors spend is just drafting stuff, right? So it absolutely has to have a human in the loop. We think it'll get close to a point where the AI can help accelerate the relationship that an advisor has with this client to get to a point where they can bring out the best in the relationship and the like. And we think that can happen. But certainly anything that involves a correspondence, writing to a database, sending out a file, that sort of stuff, it absolutely has to have a human.
And review, of course. It is crazy that the margin for error with AI is, even if something is not remotely, like it has, yeah, as you mentioned, 2% incorrect or 1% failure, it is considered failure. So we've totally got to make sure that it's there. Do you see a place for, like we talked about voice agents before, do you see a place for that in whether it's the profession or just tech in general, like using avatars or voice at all?
The way we're thinking about voice is, how is the agent present in the meetings and can follow you around and the like? As your drunk intern, I think is a term used a few times. But you wouldn't want your drunk intern to write an SOA now, would you? We think that's part of the experience, but it's absolutely got to be a human in the loop. AI to our mind is about how does it help people get to 100% completions better, or how in an organization can it help people be the managers of data and the experience with data and compute? How can it change their experience? Certainly what we're seeing with the EY study is potentially it's reallocating responsibilities in the organization. We think that's also exciting for, you know, one thing as a quick segue, this industry, I think 20 years ago had like 25,000 advisors in it. Now it's got 15,000 registered, of which there are only 10,000 which are notionally active. But I think the efficient frontier of the professionals that are speaking to clients is actually larger. It's just that the financial planners have become a more compressed technical core, which is fitting in a much larger professional ecosystem of accountants, mortgage brokers, a whole range of other professionals. And we think AI will start to reimagine part how that value chain works between the the person which touches the client first, all the way through to the quintessential technical professional, through compliance, mid and back office, and all the way back. And we think that is where AI will unlock its gains. I think there's some things that, from a casual sci-fi or colloquial sort of response to AI as being a thing that could create an avatar or an artificial robot or whatever it might be, some tasks, like there'll be a lot of tasks in the workplace which that can play a role in, but in this industry, which requires people, human relationships, intensely private information, which is not in training or external, we think that it's going to be people. Yeah, it's always going to be people. And I think if you're an advisor which thinks it's a great thing that you can stick an avatar up to your clients, I think you're going to lose an awful lot of clients really quickly, is my personal view. Other people might have a different opinion.
No, I agree with you. I also think I was watching, we got Sora too. I haven't made the switch over to TikSlop, but it was a TikTok video, which I'll refer to as reading an article. That's the code word for saying that. But the opinion of this person was that we will see the return of face-to-face meetings because it's just so hard to differentiate between what is real and what is not. And you just want to be able to see and look that person in the eye. And I guess that's part of the value chain, isn't it? That you've got a real professional in front of you and that relationship has been built and maintained.
Yeah.
I think it's really important.
There's some data that people have turned off peak digital, especially when it comes to younger people in the younger generation. We may have hit peak social media use 3 to 5 years ago. That's actually eased off. There's only so much that the algorithms can pump people with dopamine on either TikTok or Facebook or others. I mean, you go into Facebook now, it's like Tumblr, basically. You know, there's this reaction to something different. I think AI will help people, at least in this industry, have better human relationships across the board. It's you can't miss the impact that it's going to have across society. It's totally. Definitely coming.
That's a great point about what Facebook's become, and then LinkedIn feels like what Facebook was as well. So if on the topic of, you know, in-person meetings, do you see, and you obviously got the agent there, do you see Fable having a role like live in these in-person meetings where it can retrieve information, pick up on the conversation, et cetera? Or is it more, tell us about how you're sort of thinking about that.
Oh, absolutely. We're doing that now. So you're in a meeting and if you have a meeting progressing, we're starting to guess what is going on in the meeting and what you need to do completion. We know that in many cases, many workflows, you know, you'll forget one thing or you need to go check one thing with a client. And those things break a workflow and extend it over longer periods of time. So it might be you've got two numbers that don't match. You might need to go and get an instrument number for an investment instrument or a particular policy or whatever it might be. All those sorts of things. Because we are guessing these things as the conversation is going along, we're hoping to get you to a better meeting completion. We also know that meeting notes, as an example, there's a lot of generic meeting notes out there. A meeting note may change depending on the style of the conversations you're having. If you're talking about equities, insurance, general advice, the range of different things, we can help the advisor think about what is needed to pre-complete compliance as it's going along. We have a case at the moment where we can complete all your compliance checklists potentially live in the meeting. It's entirely possible that we're just working on this workflow at the moment where you could have your meeting with your client and you think you've got everything. You can actually run compliance at that point in time, guessing whether you have everything needed to complete whatever bit of advice or document you need to complete, and actually pre-guessing then what you'll need to make sure is compliant so that you're actually doing compliance before the client leaves the meeting. So we think that's pretty cool. So there's all those sorts of things we're doing to re-engineer the process, and we think that means that the advisor can have a better experience with the clients.
I'm totally with you. I think that would give so much psychological safety to advisors of the 10,000 active ones that are left, and then would also, I assume, help the new entrants to the profession who are still in those meetings and getting that valuable insight and experience that they know exactly what's required and they can feel just more comfortable and not sort of stage fright, if that makes sense. They can have a better conversation with the clients.
The original, one of the earlier taglines for our business was be the human, not the machine.
Nice.
That's how we think about part of it. We took the name of the company, the original name of the company was Your Beautiful Life, and that is the West Australian in me. But I think internationally, people will say a mistake us for being a vitamin company or a All right.
That's a good point. Yep.
With that sort of name. So Doug came up with this fantastic idea around fable, which if you look at the etymology of the word, is it's about having a story with a moral tale. And I think that's very much about the values of our business. We're about helping people live better lives. And that's how we think about it.
Perfect. Now, Steve, congratulations on your success today. I'm really looking forward to reading that report from EY. What's the best way for someone to get started with Fable or to learn more or to reach out to you?
If you reach out to us on the website at contact@fable.com, we're working closely with the guys at EY. You can log in and trial and play with the service yourself to get the best use out of it. We work with EY to help get it into your office and start helping you change your life all for the better.
I love it. Steve, thanks again. Really appreciate your time.
All good. Thanks, Patrick. Cheers.